Stand by while NCLA cuts through the noise to signal abuse of administrative power. This is Administrative Static with Mark Chenoweth and John Vecchione.
Welcome to Administrative Static. This is John Vecchione, and I'm here with Mark Chenoweth on this slow news week. obviously, for anyone who does administrative law, a Supreme Court resignation is always big news. But in this case, Justice Breyer is also a guy who did a lot of administrative law, both as a justice and even before. And
wrote my administrative law casebook that I used in law school.
Oh, I did not know that. And yeah, so, you know, he does not have a tangential relationship with administrative law. He's one of these weirdos who likes writing those opinions. So as you've probably heard by now, Justice Breyer has discussed with the administration, and then it leaked that he is going to resign from the court at the end of the term when his successor has been confirmed. And that's commonly done. That's commonly the way it's done. It's usually not leaked this way. They usually have a lot of respect for the Supreme Court justice and let them do it their way. In this case, it looks like that somebody jumped the gun, but I don't think
deliberately,
it was,
probably.
Yeah, but I think I think that it may be the Biden administration needed a win. The news
or just change the subject.
Yeah, exactly. So it looks like Breyer's going to go, and I think we should talk a little about him and what this means. So he holds down what I'll call the progressive interpretive wing of the court of the three. He's the oldest, and as I always say, only when we're talking about Supreme Court justices does a 83-year-old man retire, and everyone says, "Why did he do that? What's going on?" So there's obviously a number of things going on here because it's not because he's lost a step. You can hear at the arguments, and you know if you've seen him, I don't think he's any slower than he was 10 years ago. He still loves his three-part questions that go on for a while, but he's always done that. He's written books on making sure that he's against court packing and all this. He's made very forceful arguments within the last year on that sort of thing. So this is not a justice who's leaving because his powers have faded. I don't think that's true with Breyer. He's leaving because he does think that there is, while he probably does not like this campaign to get rid of him, he does think there's some merit in allowing his successor to be appointed by a Democrat with a nominally Democrat Senate. I mean, I think that's a fair reading, Mark.
Yes, I do. I think that's right. I mean, this is, in some sense, this might be the ideal Senate from his perspective, because it might be difficult to get through someone who is too far to the left. And that might be just fine with Breyer.
I think that's true. He's not a bomb thrower. He's never been a guy. He tends to side with the left on all the social issues and that type of interpretation. And he is what I would call, he's probably going to be the last of his kind of the sort of 1960s, 1970s Democratic, progressive technocrat.
That's a good way to put it.
And I think that those folks, one of the things that's interesting, I think particularly our younger listeners will think, none of these progressives ever care about what things cost or anything. He has been pretty solid on cost benefit, I think, for his end of interpretation. He hasn't been a regulation no matter what. He does look at that.
Wasn't he one of the gurus behind the deregulation of the airlines during the Carter administration?
He was. He thought, and in fact, he was an aide to Kennedy. And if you ever see Kennedy doing anything deregulatory, I believe you can see Breyer behind him. he did, and trucking. I believe trucking as well. And so that created enormous value in the American economy of the 80s.
He's not a burn it all down progressive like correct. You see some of them today.
Yeah, there's no way he looks at consequences, I think. So I mean, we think you should look at the text and the history, but he does look at consequences, which tends to make you less likely to go off the rails. And in fact, and
purpose, right? He likes to look at purpose.
Yes, purpose. And I think wasn't he in the Obamacare case? He thought that certain things he sided with the folks who thought that it stepped on state prerogatives on Medicaid. He did not affirm that part. He joined with the originalists on that issue.
He was part of the 7-2 vote on that piece of it.
Yeah.
If I remember right, I think it was 7-2.
Right. So when he later says that, you know, not that everything's politics, I think that that's a true statement on that case because he didn't think that they could change the rules. He didn't believe the federal government could change the rules on the states. Purchase submission, to coin a phrase, when they had joined on to Medicaid under other laws and expectations.
You don't think he was just trading votes with the Chief Justice on that?
Might have, but the fact is that if you're looking for the progressive wing to come after your scalp, that would be a good that is the opinion you want to be on the wrong side of.
right.
So I do think, as I said, I think he's the last of that kind. And, you know, I also think the other thing about him, which is interesting, because the originalists, the Scalias, the Thomases, they set out a lot of principles and how they're judging, and they've made a public case for it. I don't believe that the progressives of late have done that as much, except that Breyer writes books about it.
He does, yeah.
He has
more of a pragmatist, though, I think, than a progressive in terms of his judicial approach. I mean, the vote results may be progressive results, but he doesn't defend his votes as though this is the progressive thing to do. He talks about it more in purposive or pragmatic terms, it seems to me.
I agree with you, but I believe that pragmatism is a type of progressivism. So I believe it's in a slot there. So my language on that is that I think that because who decides what's the pragmatic thing? If it's the judges and not the statute, that is a kind of that's living constitutionalism a little bit. But I do think, what do you think? He did write a book on interpretation and how it's done. And then he goes around the country with Scalia and they debated it. And I think that to the extent you're looking for anyone to replace him, I mean, I thought Scalia usually got the better of that argument. But I'll tell you this, if I were on that side, I would certainly want someone who could go toe-to-toe around the country with Scalia.
Right, right. And I don't know if those names are on the short list right now or not. But Breyer did have that capability. I think he was an intellectual heavyweight. And more importantly, he was able to persuade Chief Justice Roberts, Justice Kavanaugh, other folks who might not hew as far to the right, and was able to get their votes in some cases, as you were alluding to. So I think if he is replaced with someone more cut from the Sotomayor cloth, we may not see the Chief Justice or other Republican appointees stray over to their brethren appointed by Democrat presidents nearly as often.
Yeah, and I think that's also temperamental, you know? He doesn't write a lot of outraged opinions, you know? He doesn't do anything off-putting. But I also think
he's in love with experts, though.
Yeah, oh,
you remember his question about the moieties at the oral argument, and part of being a technocrat or someone who is conversant with and frankly came out of the administrative state. I mean, before he went to the bench, he had a background there, and he's, I think, more ready to defer to folks in the executive branch than are either his conservative or liberal brethren on the Supreme Court.
I think, I think maybe a little bit more. I always think he's very Cass Sunstein-like in his view.
They are co-authors on the administrative law casebook. So
I did not know that either.
Yeah, that's not too shocking.
But I'm interested that I came up with that independently, reading them independently, not having seen their casebook. But I do. So he loves experts. Oh, that is true. He's always like, well, the expertise here. And if we are in on what basis can we intervene when the experts have decided this? And that is true. But he considers that part of his pragmatism, right?
Sure.
So I do find that the Breyer retirement, of course, it sent shockwaves through D.C. But in point of fact, none of the cases this year will be affected by it because he's going to stay till the end. So there's no change in anything that'll happen till the next term.
Well, I was going to say, when you say this year, you mean now through the end of June or thereabouts?
Yeah, the judicial year. It's like the tax year.
Right. This term.
This term. So I don't think anything will change there. And I think it's going to be a change at the margins because he is one of the three progressive interpretive wing, and they're not all identical, as Mark just sort of alluded to, but they do tend on the big issues to all group together. I don't think it changes outcomes again, but over the long, the life of the law is long, and as far as what's going to happen, it matters when you've only got nine individuals. It matters what kind of person and you put in that spot. As far as on the margins, and also as far as we don't know what the issues are going to be 10, 15, 20 years from now. So who's going to replace them?
Yeah, and the coalitions can change based on the issues. So there could be some issue where his vote disappears and the new person feels differently about it.
And we'll talk about that when we come up. Yeah.
Welcome back to Administrative Static. Mark Chenoweth here with John Vecchione, and we are continuing to talk about the retirement of Justice Breyer from the United States Supreme Court. And there are a handful of names that have floated to the top here of folks who President Joe Biden may be inclined to appoint to replace Justice Breyer. And there are a couple of distinguishing features that all of these names have in common, John, which is that they are all African-American women. And that's because on the campaign trail, President Biden promised to appoint an African-American female to the Supreme Court. There has not been such a justice before. And Jen Psaki, the White House press secretary, has said as recently as yesterday that President Biden plans to stick by that plan. So, let's talk about some of these names, John. What are the names that you're hearing, and what can you tell us about them?
So the great mentioner of D.C. has been mentioning these. there's always the great mentioner comes out, and there's the one who I think fits the mold of everybody else who's up there right now is Leandra Krueger. She has I always say that the Catholics say about bishops who might become Pope, that they're Popeabili. Well, I think these people are Justiceabili. And I think Leandra Krueger is the most Justiceabili because she has the resume. She went to Harvard and Yale Law School, and everybody up there except Amy Comey Barrett, who went to a little-known Catholic trade school called Notre Dame, went to either Yale or Harvard. So Leandra did that. She's an associate justice in California. She clerked
On the California Supreme Court.
On that California Supreme Court. Exactly. That's where she is. But she clerked for the Supreme Court of the United States. and for Stevens, and to tell Judge Tatel, who just retired, and another person on my list has been appointed to that. She's going through confirmation now to Tatel's spot, so it's kind of interesting. But so she also was in the Solicitor General's office. Leandra Krueger has and has argued 12 times before the court. And so what you've got there is almost created in a lab to be a justice nominee.
Even an associate of my old law firm was Wilmer Cutler and Pickering when I was there. This says Wilmer Cutler Pickering Hale and Doors, so she must have been there after me. But she spent a couple of years there, as did I.
And she went on to teach at Chicago Law, to just add to it.
How about that?
Yeah. So I think that I think she's probably the most progressive of on my list, but she does have, she's checked all the boxes you want to check of a modern Supreme Court justice. Then we have Tanji Brown Jackson here from DC. She was born in DC. She's down in Miami, but she's the only one I know personally that I've appeared before. And she was a district court judge. She also clerked on the Supreme Court for a guy named Breyer. So she has that. She doesn't have as much academic, she hasn't, you know, been as big an academic and argued cases for the Supreme Court, but she's certainly been here in DC and been following DC Circuit for quite a while. And
well, she's been confirmed twice to the federal bench.
Yeah, and the most recent time was in June of last year. So June of 2021, she got 53 votes in this very divided Senate. So she has a very recent confirmation.
So three Republicans voted for her, at least.
Correct. At least. I think it was four. But yeah, something like that. It might have been three. And the fact is, that was at a very contentious time. So she also, she's no slouch either, having the Supreme Court clerkship and the Harvard background and that sort of thing. And she has a lot of district court opinions you can read, but that, you know, normally they come from the circuit. You usually let them percolate on the circuit a little bit, to use a phrase. And she hasn't written any opinions for the DC Circuit yet. I haven't seen any. And Ed Whelan of National Review, who I am someone I trust when he says these things, says she hasn't had any majority opinions.
She's a little bit older too. I think Krueger is 45 and Jackson is 51, if I understand correctly.
A little bit older. Watch it.
Krueger's younger than me. Brown Jackson's older than me. That's all
I'm
saying.
There you go. So there's three. Yeah, there's three Supreme Court justices younger than me now. I'm like, oh my God. Anyways, and then the last on my list is Judge Michelle Child.
Well, I don't think we could leave Brown Jackson without mentioning the Paul Ryan connection.
All right. So she's married to the twin brother of Paul Ryan's brother-in-law. And I think he introduced her when she was introduced to the district court. So they've known each other. So there, it is kind of funny that she's married to the twin brother of his brother-in-law. And, but I think that helps her. Look, there's nothing like, knowing people on the other side to get confirmed.
And I think her votes came from Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski and Lindsey Graham from South Carolina, I think.
Yeah.
I think.
So then, speaking of South Carolina, that's Judge Childs, who she went to the University of South Carolina. She
Juliana
would have
Michelle Childs.
Yes. And she would have a different type of resume from these other folks. She did not go to the Ivies. And I think there's some concern on the left that she appears to believe in the capitalist system, having defended in the labor context certain corporations when she was a lawyer.
Is that a disqualification now?
I think it, you know, the fact that she was at Nexen Pruitt, which is a big law firm in South Carolina, and she helped write the labor third, the survey of what the law of labor is now, the third edition of that. And so she has some, has shown some academic chops, and she's certainly litigated. And then she was elected by the South Carolina Assembly to a circuit court judgeship. And so you have to think that the South Carolina Assembly is not likely to put AOC on the bench. So I think that also, just the fact that South Carolina, the South Carolina Assembly put her on the circuit, and I don't know if there's horse trading or what's going on, but I guarantee you that is not AOC.
But she has Congressman Clyburn's endorsement, who's the...
That is the key issue. That is that is what really puts her in the running, because obviously Joe Biden owes his political revival to Clyburn. Clyburn's very well respected in the Congress. And Clyburn has said outright, without contradiction that I've seen in the news, that Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott will vote for her. That's their hometown girl. They have known her for a long time, I think. And if they haven't found anything in her background to be disqualifying yet, you've got two and one of the most conservative senators in the country on her side. And if that's the case, Joe Biden has four aces in the hole. And, you know, politically, it's not a bad move unless it causes problems with his left. Who knows? But anyway, those are my three, Mark. What do you got?
Well, two other names that have been mentioned, at least in the Wall Street Journal, these two names were mentioned. One is Judge Candace Ray Jackson Akawumi, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, who was recently appointed to the Seventh Circuit in Chicago. President Biden had nominated her last year. She was confirmed by a 53-40 vote, so similar to Judge Brown Jackson getting 53 votes. And she, at the time of her nomination, she was a partner at Zuckerman Spader and had spent a decade earlier as a federal public defender in a wide range of fraud crimes, gun charges, crimes, things like that. So that's another name that is being floated. But like you said about Brown Jackson, she hasn't really been on the Seventh Circuit long enough to get much of a sense of her judicial temperament I don't know that she's written any decisions yet, but we'll certainly have to look into that and get back to our audience on that. The other name is Judge Eunice Cheryl Lee, who has served on a federal appeals court in New York. As she was appointed last year again by Biden. The Senate only confirmed her by a vote of 50-47 without any Republican votes. So that's closer than the other ones, and sounds like she may be more contentious than some of the other names that we have talked about. Her prior career was as an indigent defense lawyer. She did a lot of criminal appellate and post-conviction litigation in New York. Makes me wonder if our colleague Jeanine Yunus might have run across her or might know her. But she clerked on the Sixth Circuit, like I did once upon a time. But she clerked for Judge Eric Clay up in the court's based in Cincinnati, but he's up in Detroit. And then she also taught criminal appellate defense in a clinic at NYU Law School as an adjunct. So a little bit of the academic credential there, or clinical credential there. And so those are the names that are being thrown out. One name I don't see here, John, is Janice Rogers Brown, from who's the chairman of the board of advisors here at the New Civil Liberties Alliance. But I guess that's
not the, why that would be.
Well, you know, she spent many years on the D.C. Circuit and on the California Supreme Court, so she's got the credentials of two of these candidates wrapped up in one. But I guess perhaps there's another credential that Biden hasn't mentioned.
I'm sure it's age. I'm sure she's aged out.
Oh, okay. You don't think it's that he might not like her votes on the Supreme Court? But in any event, those are the names being floated. Merrick Garland's name is not being floated. I guess his attorney general isn't going to be elevated. But one other name that we haven't mentioned is Kamala Harris, John.
No, we haven't.
The great mentioner is mentioning her name.
I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant here. So they pressure Breyer to go, right? And they pressure Breyer to go. Then they leak that he's going. And then the... people, you could get rid of Kamala by elevating her to the Supreme Court. And I cannot think of anything that would get Breyer to unretire so fast as the guy has done nothing but run around saying how you shouldn't pack the court, how appointments shouldn't be political, how, you know, judges have to be independent and judge independently. And he's written three books sort of in that direction, one particularly on it, one on non-court packing. And no, yeah. Don't do it to Breyer. Don't do it.
Yeah, but I've got another point on that, John, which is that if I were Kamala Harris, the president can't appoint you to the Supreme Court until you resign. I'm not sure I'd want to resign if I were her, because he might not take the next step in elevator. So, there may be a trust issue with that strategy as well. We'll be right back.